the underground bunker of the Civitas Studio in Raleigh, North Carolina. It's Civitalk with your hosts, Brooke Medina and Ray Nothstein. We're here to connect culture with civics, making it relevant to your daily life. And dare we say, existence at a time where too many are triggered and offended. So, relax. But buckle up and let's wade into the deep end. What's really happening in your old North State?
Welcome to another edition of Civitalk. I'm here with my co-host, Brooke Medina. We've got a special guest today, Andrew Donaldson. He's a writer. He lives in North Carolina. He keeps up with North Carolina politics and national politics. He is on Twitter all the time. And I say that as a compliment because he keeps me informed. That's where I get a lot of news. But the first person that I see tweeting when I go to bed and wake up in the morning is Andrew. So Andrew, how's it going, man?
Apparently, I need to reconsider some life choices.
That's true.
Thank you very much.
You know what, Andrew? I would not have introduced you that way. So I want you to know this is a no judgment zone minus Ray.
Oh, no. I judge everybody. And that's what Civitalk is for. We do a lot of judgment.
I think that qualifies Ray as my most stable relationship, which is not good. But no, thank you very much. I appreciate it. I do like... I like Twitter, but I like it for the exact reasons like how I got to know Ray and you guys is because it opens your world up if you're picky about who you interact with and things. So, no, I do take it as a compliment because I want to stay informed and I want to be interacting with people that are also informed and people smarter than me and people with different worldviews than me. So I take it as a compliment.
No, and it was meant that way because especially in this time of social distancing and we're self-isolating to some degree, you know, these kind of things that we make fun of from time to time are important. You know, technology's essential for many people. And there's a lot of people who are obviously struggling with isolation. And I think, you know, as much as we make fun of social media, whether it be Facebook, even things like Instagram and Twitter, it's important for people to be socially connected because they may not have that family unit around them at all times or friends around them all times. So I know you agree, and I think we all agree that these mediums can be used in a healthy way, not only to digest news, but for social interaction.
Yeah, I think so. And we need to update the old joke about money, power, and alcohol exposes everything about you and add social media to that. Because it really is true is, you know, social media, Twitter, Facebook, it's what you are cranked to 11 in a lot of cases. So that's good and bad. But times like this, especially, this is kind of going to be the first big group social media shared experience in a lot of ways. And we'll talk about that as we go. But with everybody quarantined, social media is going to be the predominant thing in everybody's life for the next foreseeable future. It's like everything else. It's how you're going to use it. Are you going to use it for information? Are you going to use it for fear mongering? Are you going to use it to just bash people? Are you going to use it to reach out to people? It's just a tool, but it's a tool we can use really well, and I hope we do, and I know you guys do because that's why I follow both of you, and I appreciate you.
Well, we appreciate you for sure, Brooke. I'm going to start with you. What are you finding helpful and useful in this time of social distancing and under this quasi quarantine? What are you doing as a family that may be helpful to others? Because by the time this airs, we're certainly going to still be going through this full throttle. So what are some tips that you can give from your own experiences?
Oh, well, that's easy. Just make everybody go to their rooms when they're not behaving. So there you go. No, seriously, though, we have had lots of family togetherness time through this. But something I actually shared on social media, because this is our best means of communications at the moment, is that having been a military family since I was being part of a military family since I was 5 years old, all the way up until last year, we've had many instances when we lived in hotels together for up to 6 weeks at a time. And so being quarantined in a house is relatively easy for the most part. However, kids still get on each other's nerves. And so for all the parents out there, I see you, stand strong. But also don't feel bad if you have to tell everybody to have their own quiet time for a little while and spend some time apart if they can. Sometimes it's hard to do in closed quarters, but And under those cases, I tell them, well, look, just build yourself a little tent with these blankets or something and pretend you're in a different time zone than the rest of us. But yeah, I think that these are times where we can actually have some good family togetherness and bonding, whether we've been watching lots of movies on Disney Plus or playing games together, including video games. So yeah, these are some good opportunities to do that and make some lemonade out of the lemons.
Andrew, you got any wise tips for us?
It's been similar to ours, and I was active duty military for many years and have some of those same experiences, but with my two youngest kids home, it's been mostly trying to downshift from the school schedule on no notice and those things. So it's family time, but it's also trying to figure out a rhythm of normalcy between now and whenever this is going to end. And I think that's what a lot of people are probably struggling with, more than just the news and the anxiety and all that, is like, okay, well, what do I do through 8 to noon where I'd normally do this? And what do I do 1 to 5 that I normally do this? So with the kids home and people not being able to get out as much, it just changes people's routines. I think, like Brooke was saying, though, it's an opportunity for, I hope, a lot of people, maybe outside of the tragedy that's going on with people being sick in your own home, if you do have your health, you know, why not take this as a reset button? Okay, well, this is what life is like when things are different than just the routine we're all set in. So it, you know, we talked about it being what you make of it. If you're not sick, you have a potential to maybe help other people out a little bit and take care of your own. So maybe it's not the worst thing in the world for folks that still have their health to just take the reset button of like, oh, well, this is what life is like when we don't have a rat race to run all over the place, or this is what life is like when we're all quarantined at home for long periods of time, or this is how we stretch our food out and change our meal plans and change. There's an opportunity here to also change things. So maybe folks will take advantage of that and, you know, just make the best of it, because we're going to all be doing this for at least the next couple of weeks, it looks like. So make the best of it, Sue.
Yeah, that's great advice. One of the things, and I agree with all of you, especially coming from a military background myself. My dad was an Air Force retired Air Force pilot. We moved around a lot. I mean, we moved from Hawaii to Egypt. I was born in Okinawa, just constantly moved. And I think that helps me adjust to just crazy wild turns. And I know it does other people from a military background, because you just have to adjust to bizarre things. And moving from Hawaii to Egypt was quite the culture shock for myself. But, you know, you just adjust because you have to. And I'd also add, I mean, I'm not going to cover the stuff y'all did, but I'd add that just going outside has been really helpful. We've been going for family walks, and I think, Brooke, you posted about that at least once I saw. And nothing's really changed outside, so get out and enjoy creation. I think that's an important part of enjoying liberty and freedom to begin with. I think the less that you're just constantly absorbing news, especially cable news, where sometimes it's focused more on just getting eyeballs and the hysteria to keep you hooked on it. It's important to get outside and, like Andrew said, hit that reset button, walk around, enjoy nature. It hasn't changed. And I think that's an essential aspect, if you have the opportunity to do that, to take advantage of that.
Except you're wrong about one thing.
Go ahead.
It's pollen season. I don't want to walk around outside.
Yeah, my wife freaked out because I went up to one of the fern trees and started shaking the pollen off, and it was insane. I mean, even I was like, oh, wow.
Yeah, and people that aren't familiar with the South for pollen season, we have two things happen at the same time. All the azaleas come out, which is beautiful, but they all immediately turn yellow because of all the pollen. So that's kind of what's going on here, because we've actually had really nice weather in this area for the most part for the last few days. So it is nice outside, but if you're an allergy sufferer, you're getting it on both ends right now. So if you go outside for relief, you're going to wind up with the sniffles anyway. So sorry to contradict you, but us allergy folks, it's not the most pleasant thing to be outside right now.
No, that's sad. I feel like you should get outside a little bit, but if your allergies are that bad, then I hear you. Let's talk about social media, because I've seen some wild stuff on social media, you know, many from journalists, prominent journalists. How is it helpful to kind of digest and wade through social media at this time? You're on Twitter a lot, obviously. What are some tips I think, to sort of calm your nerves and calm your anxieties through all this.
You know, I tell people often that one of the keys to Twitter, or, and the same thing goes with Facebook, although that's a lot more family and friend oriented. And full disclosure, I don't even have a Facebook account because I just don't care for the medium. But as far as Twitter goes, times like this really, really bring it out that what you need to do is not just follow people that maybe you agree with on politics, or you they're kind of your tribe, or for lack of a better way of explaining it, follow good people. And by good people, I just mean decent people, people that aren't just on there flame throwing, or not just on there to make fun of people and call people names and those sorts of things. Follow good people, because the good people are going to find a way to make things like this more tolerable, and they're going to give you good information. And those good people can come from a full cross section of life. You know, there's very good journalists. There's some journalists that are not nice on social media. There's very good government officials that give you good information. There's government officials that are not nice on social media. So social media has actually become this tool where we not only get an information source, but we also kind of get a peek into how their personality works, and whether they're, you know, are they a nice person? Can they be a jerk sometimes? Do they name call? And all that flows into when you have a crisis like this, because now you're dealing with social media with a currency of how much do you trust people? And trust can come from how people have conducted themselves when times were good and now the times are bad. So you're seeing it on social media, even amongst journalists, even amongst government officials. If you just melt down on social media at a story, or you go hysterical after a story, people see that and notice that. So with the social media stuff, one of the big things with right now that I've tried to do, and a lot of people I've encouraged them to do as well, is like, you know, if you're already following good people who are consistent and have good integrity when the times are good, you're not going to have to worry about them too much in the crisis. So that's the first thing with social media. And then the second one is just your discernment level. And you really have to just, it doesn't cost you anything when you see a tweet or a Facebook post or something like that to go ahead and Google it independently and see whether it's verified or at least plausible before you just automatically pound that resend button or forward it to somebody else. There's a lot of mess out there with, you know, just even the stats on the coronavirus. And, oh, there's a case here and there's a case here and a case here. Take the extra minute. It doesn't cost you anything. You don't lose lifestyle points. Google it. Check a verifiable source. See if, you know, there really is 2,000 dead people in Wilson or wherever before you just automatically turn around and send it out too. So those are the two big things, is, you know, maintain your integrity and credibility through this, and really have a good amount of discernment when you're using social media, when you're having a this is probably what, I don't know what you'd call it, maybe a peak news event. It's almost like a national hurricane kind of thing where just everybody's talking about it all the time. You know, so those are the two things, integrity and your discernment levels, and you should be okay using social media for right now.
Yeah, I totally agree. Brooke, what kind of tips do you give people? Is Brooke available? Andrew.
I'm not Brooke, but till we get her back. It's interesting. I was just writing about this over the weekend. People want to compare this to the H1N1 outbreak in 2009. We're a very different people now than 2009. So if we probably forgot this, but in January of 2009, the most popular social media platform was MySpace. So if you think about how much different we are from 2009 to now, and how things are going to get transmitted, it kind of gives you a minute to think, like, okay, well, it's not just the viruses and who's present, those things that are different. It's also us that is different. And then once we're done with this, coronavirus crisis, whenever it does end, we're going to have to kind of recalibrate and go, okay, well, when the next one comes, we're going to be different again. So that's something to keep in mind too, that what it is now, it's not going to be like this in the future again.
So, okay, I'm back, you guys. And Andrew, just listening to what you're saying, a couple of thoughts on that and takeaways is really that social media shapes our perspective in a lot of ways, which speaks to your recommendation in being discerning when it comes to the information that you're believing and sharing and the people you're following as well. And also that times of stress really reveal character. That's something that I remember growing up hearing one of my mentors saying a lot, is it's during these times of trial that really show what kind of person you are and what you're made of. And I think that's also a beauty to the military lifestyle that all three of us have close connections with, is that it's an institution, the military is, that forms character in a lot of ways. And sadly and regrettably, a lot of our institutions no longer do that like they're supposed to. But really, I mean, church, civic organizations, families, these are all character-forming institutions. And it's during times like this that, when we're at home, for example, with our kids for long periods of time, that we have an opportunity to spend extra time investing in them. But when we're looking outwards and we're interacting with people on social media, how we treat them really says a lot about our character, even if they're a troll. Like Ray and I have some of our special trolls that like to make fun of what we're doing and mock us a lot. And Andrew, I'm sure you're no stranger to trolls either. So, you know, there's just so many opportunities to look at this time of national shutdown in a way and consider really what it's revealing about who we are as individuals and who we are as people. And I think social media is just the medium wherein we're doing that.
Yeah, totally agree with you, Brooke, Andrew. And one of the things, my wife's an administrator at a college nearby, and she's dealing with students, because there's still students on campus. There's international students that can't go home quite yet. There's students from out of state. So they still have students on campus. They've got a few students quarantined on an athletics team. And one of the big challenges is the mental health aspect, because you had students, especially in sports, who are training years of their lives, really decades ultimately, and they can't continue their season. They can't finish out their season, their eligibility. And then you have some folks who are quarantined and they're just not handling it well. And so I think that mental health aspect and balance is so critical. And to just check on people, to minister to people, if you have an opportunity to do that, you can certainly do that over the phone, through FaceTime, through other technology. You don't have to necessarily physically be there, but that's still an important part. I mean, I hear these great stories from her, like the residence directors going out and buying them food because, you know, obviously we all remember college, the cafeteria food wasn't that great. And they go out and just go out and get them something, or write them a sweet note and slide it under the door for the few students that are being quarantined who've been exposed there. So there's all these great stories coming out of this that I hope will be long lasting, that I hope will, you know, be culture transforming to some extent. I know nothing will be perfect, obviously, here on Earth, but I do hope that there's some like culturally transformative issues. Let's transition to a topic a lot of people in North Carolina might be interested in, and this whole debate about the closing of restaurants and bars, and the Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest challenged Governor Cooper's executive order because there's I don't remember the actual line of the statement, but it talks about he had to get the approval of the Council of State to issue that executive order, and that vote didn't go his way, but he still decided to be proactive in his mind and close the restaurants and bars. And I think it just instead of arguing about the semantics of who was right and wrong, I think this does pose an important point that we should discuss about really what is the overall sense of awareness citizens need to have about their state government, their local government, even their federal government at this time, in terms of trusting them, making sure we have good leaders in power for future elections that have an important aspect of virtue. And you know, I always like to say, within almost every politician, I've worked for politicians, I've worked in a few campaigns, there's a little dictator inside of them. That's one reason they're in politics. It's not everybody, but in a lot of politicians, there's this little aspect of a dictator. They want to take control. They have a lot of problem-solving mentality in them, but that can lead to a creep of problem setting in an abuse of power. So how do we navigate this abuse of power when we live in a country where we have so many inherent rights, we have so many constitutional rights? And as this process and kind of quasi-quarantine goes on, I think some of that's going to get challenged, and we're going to see more friction on this issue. So, Andrew, if you want to start to kind of discuss that a little bit, that may be helpful for listeners.
Yeah, so the overall umbrella is, okay, we're going to declare a state of emergency. President Trump has done that nationally and enacted Stafford Act powers to do that. And then there's also the governors declare a state of emergency. So somewhere in here, and people don't have an appetite for it right now, but somewhere in here, there's got to be the conversation of what actually entails the powers during the state of emergency. What can you and can you not do? So we get the governor yesterday changed from the first couple press conferences he's had, and now we're going to the restaurants and bars. Most restaurants can still do carry out, take out, drive through, those sorts of things. They just want the dining rooms closed for the most part. And the lieutenant governor, who we have to fairly mention, is also going to be running against
right.
Governor Cooper.
That's important.
Is saying, well, you can't do that, and it's going to be bad for the economy. Now, there's a great discussion for us to have in there. There's an overlaying layer of that we need to just be adults and understand is like, look, people are assuming the economy is going to have a really rough go of it, and there's an election year, so both of them are going to try to paint whose fault it is that the economy is not good for their election reasons. So that's one layer to it. The practical layer of it is people's day-to-day lives are being restricted by the government. And at some point, those things do need to be thought out, fleshed out, and litigated of what the government can and cannot do. Now, the state governors have a whole lot of leeway legally and in the court system as to what they can and cannot do, as does the president has a lot of leeway when it's a disaster area. And a lot of people are just not going to have the appetite for that now, but it's going to be important down the road for us to kind of mark how they do things and what they're doing and for us to be able to come back to it. And then one other thing you said, Ray, that I think's going to be really important going forward with the lieutenant governor and the things they were saying. Not everything Governor Cooper did was wrong. For one thing, he got rid of the delay for unemployment benefits. The treasurer, Dan Falwell, was on this morning talking about what a great shape the state of North Carolina is in fiscally, so they can do things like, well, we don't need to delay unemployment benefits. We should have plenty because we have a very good fiscal. So even within the politics of this, we need to make sure that, okay, we did this. This is a good thing. We don't have to wait for unemployment benefits for the folks that are going to be out of work. And then we can still have this discussion of local government. You know, how does the school boards react to this? What power does a school superintendent have to deliver meals, for example? I know in Hoke County, the superintendent for the county was actually out on school buses delivering meals. Is that something that's inside the purview of people? Other counties like my county, Cumberland County, they're you got to go to the school and pick up meals. All these things are going to have to be fleshed out of what the local government can do, the state government can do, and then, you know, later on, and everybody's focus is going to be on the national government because that's more the spectator sport. They need to flesh these things out. Probably right in the middle of the crisis ain't the time to go to court and litigate it all. But once we're done with this, we do need to have those discussions of, okay, what can the governor tell the average citizen to do and not to do in a health emergency?
I think that also reveals which elected officials are, when given a little bit more leash, are I guess more than happy and chomping at the bit to sort of take on extra constitutional powers. And then those that are really careful about making sure that they're doing everything they can to protect the public, which is something that's within their purview, but are still very conscious of making sure that they don't cross lines and that they show respect for the state or federal constitutions. And, like you said, now is a difficult time to bring that conversation up and actively pursue legal action on it. But it is something that voters need to be aware of and make sure that they're taking into consideration. I mean, just even Ray and I, a couple of weeks ago, we're talking about Michael Bloomberg and his sort of authoritarian leadership style when he was mayor of New York City. And so, you know, that sort of behavior carries over into other aspects of life. And so it's sort of telling when you have elected officials that are willing to sort of bypass the Constitution if it's politically expedient for them to do so. But once again, it's a difficult circumstance. We're in uncharted territory right now. So our appeal is just let's respect the rule of law. And let's not lose our minds, but let's also be discerning when it comes to what is within an elected official's actual constitutional authority and what isn't. And let's talk for a moment about Philadelphia. We all talked about this before we started recording. And they have announced, well, I think it was per an internal memo that got leaked, but with the courts closed during this pandemic, the Philadelphia Police Commissioner said that they will be delaying arrests for nonviolent crimes. Now, those crimes include drug offenses, theft, and prostitution. Personally, I don't really have a problem with them delaying arrests when it comes to drug offenses and prostitution, but a real problem when it comes to theft, because that means that they're failing to uphold and protect individual rights and liberties of other Americans, and they're not actually, you know, protecting the public in that way. And so I think that's problematic. But what do you guys think?
I would agree with you on the theft aspect and also those other two offenses that you mentioned. But I totally agree, because I think it's one of the things that we instituted government to begin with. I mean, anybody who reads the founders knows this, anybody who reads Western history, but the protection of private property is kind of the penultimate of why we have government in the first place. Just go back and read, the founders and who they studied. Government was all about protecting property. So I think at this time, government is equipped to protect private property and to stop theft. So, if it was more severe, then maybe you would almost allow for some latitude. Not that you would want any sort of public looting. That's why you need a virtuous society. But I agree with you, Brooke, 100% that government can and should protect private property at all times and when they are able to.
Yeah, and to be fair to the Philadelphia police, I'm always wary to go to the mat over a hill piece on anything without verifying it. But the memo's not quite as bad, or at least the one they link to, if it's valid, it's not quite as bad as their headline makes it out to be. They do talk in there about, the line officers, if they feel there's a threat to public safety, they shouldn't just release them. They need to get their supervisors involved and that sort of thing. But the premise of it is important of, okay, we still have to have law and order, even in a public crisis of, and a health crisis is very unique because you're talking about transmittal diseases here. It's not like a danger, like a terrorist attack where you can just clear the area. So it's something important to talk about with this. And one of the things with crisis, to go back to what Brooke was saying a minute ago, we sometimes let government off us. Oh, well, the government, oh, well, the media, these are people. The government is a bunch of people. The media is a bunch of people. And going back to what Brooke said, when people are in crisis, what happens is, whether it's the police or a school board or a governor or whoever, they tend to take a crisis. And when you're completely off the map, like we are with right now, where nobody's ever really done what we're doing right now as a nation, at least in our lifetimes, what they're going to do is they're going to fall back on their priors. And this crisis is going to confirm your priors. So if your priors are, well, government solves everything, that's the prior they're going to default back to, and they're going to try to make the government fix everything. If your priors is, we need to still restrain government, get the good parts that government can do, but still restrain their powers so that people don't get hurt, that's going to be your prior you're going to default back to. So something like the Philadelphia thing, it's, yeah, if you've ever had to go to court for any reason and waited outside for a court, that's probably a contagion zone par excellence, because it's just crammed in people. I totally get that they want to clean out the court system for minor offenses, probably a very good health idea. Do you want it getting out publicly? No. Do you want non-violent offenders out? Sure. Do you want violent offenders? No. So this is another one of those things where we very much need to watch. I think the head of police there is named out, Danielle Outlaw, if I remember right. We need to react to how these people deal with these things, because it's going to reveal, like Brooke said, it's going to reveal how they really feel about government, because they're going to go to their core belief systems to handle this crisis.
Yeah, and I think one of the things...
Well said.
I think one of the things we got to remember, we're closing out soon, but the importance of federalism in all this, one of the things that bothers me is you have some media members, and they're clearly partisan in most cases, but they're just lecturing people. And some of this has to do with attacking the president. And I get you don't like the president, but they're lecturing people that we have to have all these top-down centralized decisions during this crisis. And that's not true. I think federalism is still an essential component to self-government in this country and to government in general, because look, it's always going to be true, even in a time of a pandemic and crisis, that the government closest to the people are going to govern best. And they're going to be closest to the people that they represent. And we should look to them first. Calvin Coolidge gave a great example when he said that those that think of the federal government first when they think of government, we've already lost the war on sort of instituting federalism in our country, because I think it's so essential that our local government is the best to respond to a crisis in many instances. And that's going to be universally true. And I think that's important as we navigate this and try to restore liberty as much as possible all across this country in this post-epidemic crisis, is that we're focused on that truth. And that's a timely and important truth at this time to continue in America, that we don't overly trust in a centralized process to solve our problems and deliver us from something. Legislation is not going to certainly solve all of the problems that we face going forward, especially from an economic standpoint.
That's so good, Ray, and a very, very important takeaway that hopefully all of us keep in mind going forward. But I have one more important question for both of you, and that is, what is on your coronavirus quarantine playlist right now, either movie-wise or music-wise? What are we listening or watching?
Honestly, I haven't had a lot of time to do a lot. I've listened to some Orthodox Byzantine chants to kind of just calm my nerves a little bit. Not that I have high anxiety or anything, but sometimes.
How do those go again? Can you hear them more?
Yeah, so, I don't know. I've been listening to some Orthodox chants. I've been listening to a lot of Irish music, Ned of the Hill, some of these kind of sad songs I've always liked. The Parting Glass. My 3-year-old son is obsessed with The Parting Glass, which is an old Scotch Irish tune. Many of you are probably familiar with it, but he asked so many questions about it, and I don't know how to always answer, because it's not clear in the lyrics of the song why the man's going away, why he's leaving the party, why he's giving a toast to his friends. So my 3-year-old son, he even asked me, he goes, "Why do I love this song so much?" And I go, "I don't know. You just love it. You keep talking about it and asking for it." So I've been singing it to him at bedtime, and we've been praying. He just real quickly, it kind of brings in the seriousness of everything, even though this wasn't related to coronavirus. My 3-year-old son, he asked me, he goes, "Why did Jesus save us?" He's really big into the Jesus Storybook Bible right now. And I said, "Well, because sin and death." And then he asked me, "What's death?" And so then I had to have that conversation with a 3-year-old, which I was not expecting to have, about death. And so, all that stuff just kind of hits home a little bit more at this time, I think.
Yeah, it's... I'm not one to give a lot of parental advice, because I've not been very good at it for the most part. But one thing that you're gonna find out when you have my 2 youngest that are home are 11 and 13. So you find out with younger kids when you've already had older kids too, is they're gonna remember this stuff better than you think they do, and they're gonna remember parts of it that you never thought about while it's occurring. So they're going to remember little snippets of this that you're not even thinking of right now. So it's finding those little moments like that. And you're never going to be wrong as a parent to try to find a teachable moment in what's happening in real time. Cause to a lot of teenagers, and our oldest is in college. She's actually was supposed to graduate college in May. They canceled her college graduation, but she was also student teaching. So she kind of got doubly hit by this thing, because they closed the schools for a student teacher. So kids in the college age and the high school age, this is very much going to be like not completely comparable, but as far as memorizing it, this is going to be one of those life events, like a World War II or like a JFK assassination or like 9/11 for our generation. This is going to be one of those things they think about as, oh, well, this is where my world changed and I had to kind of rethink things. So what the things you're talking about with your 3-year-old is important, because there's little moments like that that we can easily skip and miss. And even in the midst of, you know, the tragedy of people dying, and God, we just hope it passes quickly and is not nearly as bad as the outside numbers say it might be. You know, take those extra moments, because you really don't know when you might get sick. You don't know when you might get hit by a bus. You don't know when, God forbid, something bad happens. So take those little moments and just treasure them. And even amongst the crisis, they just get amplified in kids' minds and in adults too. And those are the things they're going to remember out of this crisis.
Yep.
Wow, that's some heavy wisdom right there, you guys. And so here I tried to end it on a light note, but you guys gave us some good, insightful.
Brooke, do you have any Civitas related? Just Civitas related announcements that people need to hear for upcoming virtual events or upcoming information? There's a lot of content on our website,
yes.
So go to civitas.org to read all of our content, especially related to all the financial stuff going on. And we're going to have more stuff on the importance of fiscal responsibility in our website and school stuff. Bob's already writing about the implication of school closings and what that means for North Carolina going forward and how that can transform and change some of the school choice movement. But what are some Civitas announcements we can wrap up
with? So, like Ray said, go to nccivitas.org to keep up with our content. But next week, Donald and I will be delivering an online virtual poll presentation. As you well know, we do statewide public opinion polling, and we have actually included some questions on COVID-19 in this most recent poll, which is currently in the field during the time of this recording. But next week, if you go to our Facebook page, it will be on March 26th. And at 11:45 in the morning, we will be presenting that to you coming live via Facebook. So join that conversation on March 26th at 11:45 in the morning, or you can go back later and watch it if at your convenience. But we really appreciate you guys joining us for this conversation, especially you, Andrew. Thank you for offering your insights, your thoughts. They're very valuable, and I know our audience appreciates it. So thanks for joining us.
Yeah,
thank
absolutely.
You so much for having me. Really appreciate you guys, and I've always enjoyed your work, and still looking to referee that singing contest between both of you. I'm available. Have your
way. I've already declared myself the winner.
You know. This is why we
we'll
need to
let Ray think that. Okay, you guys have a wonderful week.